Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
The new screensavers is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you fresh, high-quality ingredients to cook delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twit. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/NSS.
Make a robot arm from scratch. Your Apple questions answered. Can we disable a virtual bomb in time?
Live from Twit Eastside Studios in beautiful Petaluma, it's the new screen saviors! Yeah.
They great. That's Marcella and Garrett from Orlando. Thank you, too. They are newly engaged and getting married in April. Hello. Hey! Hello, everybody. Welcome to the new Screensavers. Leo Laporte here.
And Jason Snell over here.
Episode 88 for Saturday. I'm sorry. Yes, Saturday, January 21st, 2017.
88.
From SixColors.com.
Yes.
And
yes,
the Incomparable Podcast.
Yes, sir.
Where someday Leo Laporte's amazing impression of a monster will air.
Yes, someday. Someday. And a scientist. You're a scientist before you're a monster.
How long ago did we record that?
That was a year ago.
Okay.
I tried to put it out as a Christmas special. I was assured that season two of our radio theater is coming, and that will be in it. So
next Christmas, watch for the theater near you.
Yeah.
Actually, I love the radio play stuff. And we did something which you invented before the show. We were reading the chat room, dramatic readings of the chat room, yeah, as if it was actual dialogue. Mm-hmm. I really want to do that show.
That's going to be, that's
it's
like a
nonsensical.
Special.
No. The problem is, as soon as the chat room realizes what you're doing, then they start writing lines for you. And it gets to be a little bit, like that thing on Twitch where the two Google Homes are talking to one another. It's like that, right? It gets kind of weird and spacey. We have a great show planned for you. Coming up, a father. This is really kind of sweet.
It's amazing.
His daughter's arm was recently paralyzed from a rare illness. No robotic experience. He built a robotic assistive arm for his daughter. We're going to talk to him in just a second. We'll also play another game. We love the Game of Geeks. You've been on the Game of Geeks. That's a lot of fun.
It's fantastic.
We have a new one, a virtual reality game called Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes. And we will... You don't get to play it, though. Mike Elgin, Greg Farrow, and Becky Worley joined me to play that last week. Jason Howell, and we'll play it today. Jason Howell gives us his take on the high-res music service Tidal. Father Robert Ballaser with a review of a smart power bank. And we got lots of questions, and because Jason's here.
That's my fault.
Let's do some Apple questions.
Let's do some Apple questions.
But first, this is a big transition happened yesterday. We should acknowledge that, right?
Yeah.
At noon Eastern time.
The levers of power shifted.
It's called the peaceful transition of Twitter.
Exactly right.
So at POTUS, which stands for the President of the United States, which was Barack Obama's, but they were very clear when they started this last year that at POTUS belonged to the president, not to the person.
Exactly.
The office of the president. So at POTUS transferred from President Obama. They actually archived at POTUS to at POTUS 44.
Exactly right.
And President Trump took over at POTUS. And what's interesting is this happened at the same time as they took Trump's phone away.
Yes.
According to the New York Times, the Secret Service, they did this to Obama, you may remember.
Mm-hmm.
Obama came into office in 2008.
He loved his BlackBerry, and they said, sorry, not going to happen,
and
they took it away.
And crappy NSA-approved Windows phone.
Yeah.
Where they built in, the thing looked like something out of a 1950s science fiction. They built in a lot of encryption and stuff. And 2 years ago, Obama replaced that with something they said was more modern, but it couldn't play music, it couldn't surf the web,
right.
It couldn't tweet.
Right. It was a, I think it's a secure maybe even a secure Android phone,
probably.
but it's with everything removed from it.
And I'm not sure why the Secret Service thinks it's a security risk if the president has a real phone. I think some of this has to do with the fact that the laws of the land are all of the president's communications while in office belong to us and should be part of the public record.
Right.
And eventually are made public in the library or whatever. And so they want a phone that he can track. And they also want a phone that is official. Obama, remember, would tweet his wife and his daughters, and they didn't want that. They're not tweet, but text message. So they didn't want that to be public.
Right. You've got your personal information, and then you've got your governmental information. And let's not forget, every modern smartphone has a camera and microphones. And I think there's always a concern, too, that
that's what the real problem is. You know where the president is.
Yeah, right. So
that's risky.
If you can get access to any of that data, you can get audio
Good
from
point.
The president. Video of
that
the Oval
sense.
Office
okay.
and where the president
Now I understand.
Is. So
but they
pull
also
all that out.
Said
all the useful
they
stuff
take
gets
all the,
removed.
Anything
yeah.
you would want, they took out. In yeah. fact, remember Obama in 2013 was on the Tonight Show.
That's right.
And talked about his. He said it's basically like the phone you would give your kid, his play phone.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what kind of phone President Trump has now, but they took away his Android phone. They also, and I remember reading this, recommended that he no longer use @RealDonaldTrump, his Twitter account,
right.
his beloved Twitter account, which had many more followers than @POTUS. I don't know if that happened, but I do note that about 3 hours ago, as we record this, early Saturday morning, @POTUS and @RealDonaldTrump had the same kind of a generic tweet about, so proud to be 45th president of the United States. Can you show that again? Do you have that? So I'm honored to serve you. See, the same thing on both accounts. The great American people is your 45th president of the United States. Kind of a very non-Trumpish, bland
sure.
tweet. My suspicion is this is it. That's the transition. Now, one thing that happened that was kind of weird, a lot of people who didn't follow @POTUS complained this morning that Twitter had automatically auto-followed them. On @POTUS, Jack Dorsey, the CEO of Twitter, has now said, that was a mistake. We fixed that. We turned that off. So against their will is maybe a little strong. That's the story on Gizmodo. Jack tweeted, we investigated what happened here. We made some mistakes, which have been corrected. So it's part of this transition. So
they had some database issues at Twitter, and they were trying
that
to play
happens.
Back all the follows and unfollows because they're migrating.
Right.
It never happens where you have these huge accounts that are migrated like this to new screen names or you want to migrate the followers, and that's what happened
this
here.
This is unprecedented.
And in terms of Donald Trump's Twitter account, Barack Obama kept @BarackObama, and that was, I think, a campaign account for
right,
a while.
Right, but he says, now I'm going to start tweeting.
And now
here.
That's his account. POTUS44 is the archived document. But
that will be unchanging.
And that will never change now. Right,
done.
Exactly right. So that may be a model for what happens with Donald Trump.
Trump also has 21 million followers on Real Donald Trump, and there's only 14 million POTUS followers. So it would make sense to me that Twitter might try to migrate these
right.
people over.
That would make sense. I was a little surprised that wasn't the plan all along, was to just migrate the Real Donald Trump followers to POTUS.
He's called his @RealDonaldTrump his my beautiful Twitter account. But I reiterate, the Secret Service doesn't want him tweeting there. I'm not sure why that is. And what I'm also interested in is how much power they have. Can they just say, no, you can't?
Well,
I mean, he is the president.
I think a lot of what we've seen, actually, in the transition has to do with the norms of government, where this people who are civil servants, who are not political appointees, have rules of the road about this is how you do these things. And I think that part of Donald Trump's message all along has
part
been, I'm going to throw some of that stuff out.
Yep.
But there are probably moments where somebody in the Secret Service or the intelligence community comes up to you and says, no, seriously.
You're not going to.
You
well,
need to not have that phone.
Already.
Right.
He wanted to fly his own plane. They said, no. You have to fly in Air Force One.
Let's explain to you all the things nobody knows about that are in
this
Air Force One.
This is why you have to fly Air Force One. I imagine he wanted to live in Trump Tower at least some of the time.
And
I don't know if he's going to be allowed to do that.
It sounds like he is, but it's going to be a great cost because of the security
right.
in New York. Because it's in the middle of New York City, it's going to be a challenge there. But this is a story about, explain to me why it's done. And I think that maybe that's not unreasonable for him to say, I know that this is how you always do it, but you need to tell me why we're doing it.
Good.
I'm not just gonna take your word for it.
And apparently, they made a compelling argument
between them and his staff. Perhaps they're like, it's okay if you let go of the Samsung Galaxy for a while.
One of the things that's kind of interesting is that phone number on the Galaxy was well known, and people would call it,
and he would answer.
And that was the weird thing. For instance, a member of Congress said, "Yeah, I have a blocked number, but I called President Trump, and he answered the phone, even though the number's blocked. Like, he answers no matter who calls." An Associated Press reporter said, "Yeah, I called, nobody answered, so I left a message, and Donald called me back." So, you know, the Times said the staff wasn't too unhappy that he lost his phone, because one of the principal jobs of people like Reince Priebus, the new chief of staff, is blocking.
It's withholding access to the president so you can filter. And I know that that's something that I think every president who's gone into office has had this thing where it's very hard. You're used to being more open, and yet that job, you can't do that. You have to. There's so much that the president has to do that you need to have people who are filtering it out. Obama said a few years ago when they interviewed him about decisions that come to his desk that literally every decision that he got at his desk was one of these things where it was like sort of 51% to 49% about what we should do. He said anything where it's clear it's like 60-40 or 70-30,
they just do it.
I don't see that because those don't come to me because the easy decisions, you know, he doesn't have time for those.
Right.
But to do that, you've got to like not have the president checking his voicemail. Right?
Frankly, I wish somebody would take my smartphone and Twitter account away from me. It would be great. Please, I beg of you, come in here. Take it away.
Take it away.
We'll talk to the staff.
Apple, kind of in the news also, suing Qualcomm for $1 billion. Should I put my finger up?
$1 billion.
$1 billion, saying Qualcomm charged us for royalties that for a technology they didn't invent.
This is really weird, too, because it's not even quite that. It seems to me that what Apple is saying is, Qualcomm has withheld money from us because we testified against them when they were being investigated by, I think, South Korean authorities for a legal investigation, a criminal investigation.
Apple
and
says
is taking it out on them.
Qualcomm has withheld nearly $1 billion in royalty payments from Apple.
Yeah.
As retaliation for responding truthfully to law enforcement agencies investigating Qualcomm. This sounds like... Can I use the word bitch fight?
Well,
it sounds like they're slapping each... I can't? Okay.
And Apple's got a beef here, but it seems like the beef... It's literally like, while I got you on the phone, I'm really mad at you for your high premiums for your royalties. Because it's not really about that. It's like Apple saying, well, we're suing them because they're not paying us, but by the way, the royalties are very expensive and we're unhappy about it, which is kind of weird.
But they've been paying them.
Yeah.
There's this concept of FRAND royalties, right?
Right.
What is it? Fair?
Fair and reasonable.
Reasonable. The idea being if I own the royalties for how to make a phone call, for instance, something that every cell phone has to do, that I am kind of required...
Yes.
By law, to make those
patents
available for a reasonable,
exactly,
not an excessive royalty fee. So
exactly.
I don't know if these are over FRAND. Apple's saying these are legacy standards. It has nothing to do with all the innovations we're making.
And then it's way more than any of the comparative royalty plans or royalty payments they're making.
Apple's
to other
paying
companies.
Five times more.
Right.
Than other cellular patent licensees.
It seems almost like they're kicking Qualcomm when they think that they're down, when they think that they're a little bit weak, to just like give them a bigger black eye, right?
It cost Qualcomm 2.5% on its stock price on
Friday.
So here's the question. Isn't Apple... Okay, so Apple makes its own chips, the A7, 8, 9, 10, whatever. It makes those.
Right.
But it has to use radios because it hasn't yet done what Qualcomm's been able to do with the Snapdragon, which is make a system on a chip that includes the radios and the CPU and everything else.
Well, I think the argument is that they have to use those radios because certain technologies are patented by Qualcomm.
So you have to buy the Qualcomm.
You basically... have to do that. Or you can buy another radio that isn't as good, and also you have to pay a license fee to
Qualcomm. Well, and that's what happened with the iPhone 7, is Apple very famously outsourced or double-sourced its radio to Intel as well as Qualcomm. And in fact, I don't know if this is true. You could tell me. The story goes that the Intel radio is about a third slower than the Qualcomm radio. So Apple, how did Apple do? They slowed down the Qualcomm radio in iPhone 7s so that they would be as slow as the Intel ones, so that all iPhone 7s would be equally slow for data.
The same. Yeah.
What? Did that happen?
I don't know. That's the rumor. There certainly seem to be differences between the two models.
Wow.
If you happen to get an Intel.
I have an Intel.
Versus
I checked. You can
a
check
Qualcomm.
You can check the serial number and figure out which one you have.
So there's probably a whole lot happening under the surface here, but definitely this is clearly a sore spot between these companies.
Yeah.
And I've heard that from other companies too, that Qualcomm has kind of a stranglehold on phone makers, and they know it, and they're profiting from it. And it's interesting that not the first time that Apple has sort of called out a convention in
There's the
market.
Article. It says Apple's confirmed limiting the speed on the Qualcomm chipset to keep performance on par with Intel. Wow.
Yeah, see?
That's amazing. Qualcomm says Apple has... We might as well give Qualcomm its fair time. Apple has intentionally mischaracterized our agreements and negotiations, as well as the enormity and value of the technology we have invented, contributed, and shared with all mobile device makers through our licensing program. We welcome the opportunity to have these meritless claims, he didn't say it quite like that, heard in court, where we will be entitled to a full discovery. Oh, this is the threat.
Yep.
To a full discovery of Apple's practices and a robust examination of the merits. In other words, you got to read between the lines. They're saying, hey, remember when you sued Samsung? Remember all the stuff that came out, the secret memos? Remember that? We're going to do the same thing.
Well, I think you don't sue some company for $1 billion if you're not aware that you're willing at that point to go through discovery, or you're certain that there's no way they're going to let it go to court. That right? I mean, Apple knows that. You could say, well, they didn't know that with Samsung, and I would probably say that was because that entire strategy was Steve Jobs got angry and shouted to somebody to sue them, and he's not there anymore. And I think they're smart enough to know.
Well, they are now. They've been through it, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, they know what's going to happen with discovery if they do that. And they may not care. I wonder what precipitated all of this. What was the last straw to make this come out? Because these companies have been working together and paying each other a lot of money for a very long time, and now all of a sudden there's a $1 billion lawsuit.
I have to think this was coming when Apple started to use second source their radios, that they started to use Intel as well as Qualcomm, that was the writing on the wall. And my guess is, and we would know probably by now, that the next iPhone will not have a Qualcomm radio in it, that this is the beginning of that. Maybe even Apple has designed its new chip, the A, what would it be, 10, 11? The new A chip to have that radio. And this is Apple saying, okay, we're done. 10th anniversary iPhone, no more payments for you, Qualcomm. I would guess that's the precipitating factor. And this is about the time frame. If you're going to announce that phone in September, you're going to have to start testing, prototyping, and manufacturing in the next 3 or 4 months.
Right.
Now would be the time.
One of the things that happened that's probably involved in this timing is that the FTC, the U.S. Federal Trade Commission, also announced that it's going to be, I think it charged Qualcomm with monopolizing its patents,
right?
And there was a question, John Gruber wrote about that on Daring Fireball, and he was like, who turned them in? And then Apple sued them, and it's like, oh, I know who turned them in. Yeah. So it's ugly. It's ugly,
it's
right? So Qualcomm apparently has criminal investigations against it. It's got this federal trade case against it now, and it's got Apple suing them.
That was January 17th that the FTC announced that. So, yes, this is right on the heels of that.
Yeah. So it's tough.
Interesting.
Tough time to be Qualcomm.
We'll be covering it.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be fun. We like it when people fight.
Also, the Chargers moved to L.A., leaving Qualcomm Stadium behind, the San Diego Chargers. It's been a bad week for Qualcomm.
Apple should buy the L.A.
Apple Stadium. Rights.
Yeah, Apple Stadium. Ha-ha. All right, are you ready? it feels like high school, but when you when it's $1 billion at stake, this is
Qualcomm's. You know, gym clothes were pulled out of their locker, and
you gave me a wedgie. It's time for a call for help. On the line from Indianapolis, Frank. Hello, Frank.
Hello, Leo and Jason.
Great to see you.
Hey,
welcome.
Frank.
Very nice to see you. Long-time viewer, first-time caller.
Okay, now I apologize, but I've done this since the turn of the century, even before. I got to look at your picture and see what's going on here. So you got a guitar. You're a musician.
No, but okay. I like guitars.
You like to play them. I see the Asus router behind you.
Strong
That's a
Wi-Fi
nice router.
Signal there.
Yep, with lots of wires coming out of it. And then on the left, it looks like you've got a Chinese katana sword or something.
It's actually from a movie. It's The Blind Samurai, Zatoichi.
Oh, that's
neat. It was one of the props from the movie.
Are you a prop master?
No, just when I have special interests, I tend to go out and get them.
That's
please
good.
Take my money.
That's cool. Well, what can we do for you today?
So I have a question. At where I work at, we use iPod Touches. They're 16 gigabyte ones. We have quite a few of them. I heard in the intro to the show about how many we have, but more than 20.
Okay.
They're all active. They're not all active at one time. There's only about 12 to 15 that are actually being used. However, they're all in the same iTunes account. That's really just because if one gets lost, we can use the Find My iPod app and disable it.
How does that work? You'd see. So each would have a unique name.
Yeah.
And when you load that map, you've got a lot of dots. Wow, that's cool. All right.
So what we want to do is we want to take photographs of our guests that are in our property that win prizes. So we can use an advertisement, social media, marketing, and everything. I've tried using Apple iCloud Photo and PhotoStream to seamlessly move them to a central area where that marketing could get to them. But it won't let the user edit the name of the photograph just in case there's duplicates. And if someone deletes the photograph from the device, it deletes it from the cloud. So it's more of a sync issue, but the problem is it also syncs to every iPod. So if one person takes a photograph, it's on every one of them, and space is the premium. So my question is there a way that you can use the iPod Touch to take a photograph? It'd be nice if you could edit it, not necessarily a deal breaker, save it, and then automatically move it off the iPod to the central location, such as a Google Drive, Microsoft OneDrive, or even a local storage. That way we wouldn't run out of space on the iPod, and no one would accidentally delete the photograph from the storage location, and the photograph wouldn't sync across every iPod, therefore just taking up space.
Got it. What is this, a museum? Where is it that you're doing this?
Casino.
Casino. And you give your guests an iPod Touch, or you give your security staff an iPod Touch?
Actually, we're giving our attendants the iPod Touches to actually go out and take care of the job. But it's actually a dispatching system that's actually written for the iPod.
So they take a picture of the malfunctioning thing. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Or a jackpot. Okay. Hey, guy won. He just won. So we got to go take a picture, make him sign the papers for the taxes and that. Okay. And so it's a camera system. But because it's an iPod Touch, it's networked. Right. And
you want to add metadata to it, and that's one of the challenges.
Got
the photos.
So I just took a picture of Joe. He just won a big jackpot on slot machine 732. He won $4,000.
Exactly.
And you want to edit that and then have it be shared and not have the attendant be able to delete it, not have it fill up every other iPod Touch. You just want it to go to the cloud source.
Right.
There seems like there'd be a lot of ways to do this.
Well,
we
searched the staff and I both were working on some searches to try and figure this one out.
So what's the problem with iCloud? If you turn on iCloud Photo Draw, do you have to turn that on to get the
You
thing
can use
uploaded?
PhotoStream. The problem is that Apple doesn't provide any way in the Photos app to annotate images.
Yeah.
You can edit them, but like adding tags or text,
EXIF style,
giving it a new name and all of that is not really something that it does, which is too bad. That actually would be a really nice feature to add.
Yeah.
So we looked. There may be hidden somewhere in the App Store an app that does this because just there are so many.
Well, what about Dropbox or OneDrive?
So I thought about Dropbox.
Google Photos.
Google Photos, I think, is the answer here.
Okay.
Because in Google Photos, it will read your camera roll.
Yeah.
And when you tap on a photo, there is a button, an information button. It's an eye with a circle. And when you tap on that, one of the options you get is details.
Oh.
And you literally can add in anything you want.
Well, let me take a picture of Frank here. All right. And I got a nice picture of you winning a jackpot. And right now it's showing up, of course, in my photo roll. But if I go to Google Photos, it should show up there almost immediately, right?
That's the idea.
So there it is. Okay. Now I open the photo. Let's see. We'll get a tight shot. There's that nice picture of you. Good looking, Frank. And I'm going to edit this. I can back up, add to album, open in Snapseed, which is a photo editing program. Delete original. Oh, here's the you said hit the info button.
Yeah, I think that's
all right. Let me see that. Here's the I button. That shows me a lot of things you probably want, including location, date, and time. But it doesn't let me edit any. Let's see if I can do it editing the EXIF information. Hmm. Huh. I don't know. I don't know if
I've actually used that application, and it does allow you to change the name of the photograph. But what I found is if you're in the Google Photo app, you can when you delete it off of it, it actually does delete from the Google Drive.
Ah,
so it doesn't share to every other device, which
that's
really the benefit.
Yeah, but you can't delete it locally.
Well, I think, the way Google Photos works is you can then... Apple Photos does this, and I think Google Photos does that. When you delete it, it doesn't really delete it. It moves it to a deleted photos area in the cloud. So if somebody were to do that, you could then go into the deleted photos area
And get it back
and
out.
And undelete it.
I think you're right. I think you're given 30 days or something.
Yeah, because that's so easy for somebody to delete a photo in one place that you want in a different place.
And this is free, which I like.
So always a nice price.
So I can edit. I can change the file name. It's got a lot of information attached to it. It will automatically upload to the Google Cloud. You could even create an album if you wanted, add it to an album, which means that you could then say, this is part of an album from, Attendant 53 or something like that. I think that all seems like that's pretty close to what you want. You've tried it, Frank. What are the negatives?
The only negative was that, and I didn't realize about the staying online where you could actually go and undelete it.
Okay.
It's just that if you're in that app, you could actually hit delete.
Right.
And it deletes it from it. But it's great that it doesn't share across every device at one time.
I think if you hit delete before it synced, you'd have some problems, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. But and the nice thing is, so ideally you'd have all of your iPod Touches logged in to one Google account to do this. But the beauty of that is that I believe the way Google Photos works, it wants to sync the photos you've taken on device up, but it doesn't try to pull the others down. You might see a thumbnail, but you're not actually seeing like the whole.
Yeah, you'd have to open the app and then you would see it, but it doesn't actually put it on the drive at all.
Exactly.
It streams
unless you tap and have it download. Yeah.
Let me just take a quick picture of you and me, Frank, and we'll send this to you.
Be sure to annotate that.
Yeah. That's what Frank's appearance. So tell me again how I annotate it. I go to Google Photos. Whoops, that's not Google Photos. There's Google Photos. And I tap it, and then I hit the edit button or the info. You said info, but I don't see. Add a description.
No,
oh, I can do even better. I just add a description. Me and my buddy, Frank. Okay. And then that's saved. All right. And then I go back to info. And then I could send that to you, it's automatically uploaded to the Google Cloud.
Yes, with your description.
I could say it should be in an album, Attendant Leo's pictures.
Right,
of
or
winners.
January 21st, or whatever, however you want to organize it.
This seems like it'd be pretty good. And so we've solved that one issue, which is what if the attendant accidentally pushes the trash can?
You'd think that there would be. I still am not entirely convinced that there isn't some app somewhere
just
on the App
this.
Store that lets you take a picture in-app, write down something, and saves it to Dropbox.
Well, I got an idea. You could have a private Instagram feed. Aren't there private Instagram feeds? Yes, there are. Create a private Instagram feed, and when your attendant takes a picture, shares it to Instagram with a comment, and then it's all on Instagram.
The only issue I have with that is that because of the release, if it got out, and they didn't have a release.
Somebody hacked Instagram, that wouldn't be good.
Or shared it.
Right.
But no, that definitely is better than what we've been trying to use for it. There was one we looked at called Echo Stream, I think it is, which actually allows you to save it to a local hard drive storage, not even going to the cloud.
Well, there was, and they killed it. Seagate had a great service that did exactly that, and they killed it on December 31st. You had a local hard drive. Everybody would be running the Seagate app. All the pictures you take would be automatically uploaded to the local hard drive, not to the cloud, which would be good for your privacy issues. That's a big issue, right? Now you're putting on a public cloud, Google.
Right.
Google has never had a breach, to my knowledge, but that doesn't mean it won't happen.
Yeah, and if your privacy is set, it's just viewable by the one account.
Right.
Yeah, again, unless we kind of come up with something that is very specifically made for this instance, that seems like a private cloud sync with annotation is what you want, and Google seems to be the one that's closest to that.
Right.
Sounds great.
Frank, I'll send you this image.
Well, I appreciate it. I just want to say thanks, Leo. I've actually been watching your show since the very beginning.
Nice.
You're one of my bucket list to actually meet is yourself, Patrick Norton, Kevin Rose, Alex Albrecht.
Love all
great
those guys.
Great guys, great shows, and love all.
Well, you may recognize this. This is one of the shirts from the old Screensavers I discovered in my closet. Mm-hmm. I haven't worn it since then, so we brought it back.
That's nice.
It's hip. Everything's hip again. This was back in the late 50s, I think I was wearing this.
Is that go back all the way to ZD TV?
Yeah.
Before Tech TV?
Yeah. I think it's the original. Oh, one other thing. Somebody's saying, what about if you had OwnCloud, NextCloud, or in my case, Synology? Synology has a Photos app that will upload to a Synology server will never be on the cloud.
Right.
I haven't turned it on, but it has, I think, all of the features you would want. I would look at
that's that the question is can you edit the metadata? Because that seems to be the one thing that is not as common.
I should have downloaded it and installed it. I could tell you. Maybe before the show's over, I'll have that for you, Frank.
And that would have the advantage of having it be on site, and it would be something that you could have and not deal with the cloud at all.
And the beauty now, it's in the Synology, it's local to you. It's you just pull it right off that local NAS. Be very fast. I'm going to check.
Yeah.
I'm going to install that, and before this show is over, I'm going to have an answer for you, Frank. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you, Will.
I appreciate it. Good to talk to you. If you want us to answer your tech questions in exactly that same way, maybe even get a selfie, here's how.
Need tech help? The new screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
You know, it's entirely possible by the end of the show someone will have written an app for the App Store.
At the rate this show is going,
to solve his problem.
Wow. In just a second, we're going to take a look at a high-res audio solution, not Apple iTunes, not Spotify. Those are all lower quality bit streams, something that is supposedly as good as a CD.
Well, that's what Neil Young will tell you.
Yeah, Jason. Well, it's not Neil Young.
I know, but Jason, it's the high quality streams.
High quality streams.
If you can tell the difference.
You know what I have for waiting for me when I get home? A high quality meal that I'm going to cook myself from Blue Apron. Have you ever used Blue Apron?
I've been using Blue Apron for more than a year now.
You've used it longer than I have.
Yeah.
I love Blue Apron. So Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone, okay, while supporting a more sustainable food system. I'm all for that. Setting the highest standard for ingredients and building, and this is the one I love, a community of home chefs. Even if you've never cooked a lick, you will love Blue Apron. First of all, it comes in this wonderful refrigerated box, and look how fresh everything is. Even the meats, vegetables, fish, none of it's frozen. It all comes from 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the United States. Sustainable. Of course, it's exactly the food you would buy, and it costs less than buying it at the grocery store. Grocery store is about 60% more expensive because they got to have, you know, a building, and they have to have people, stock clerks, and all that stuff. Blue Apron, no, it's a lot simple. They ship you the box. It is, you get to pick the meals ahead of time, and every week there's a new menu on there. You pick your delivery day, so it never comes when you're not prepared for it. And I tell you, at the end of the day, you've worked hard. The last thing you want to do, kind of plan a meal and go shopping and get all the ingredients. And yet there's, you know, so that's why, of course, we end up at Jack in the Box. But this is not a healthy solution. You want Blue Apron, great meals. Your family will love you. They have plans for couples and families.
That's right. And it takes about no more than 40 minutes, I think they
say. That's what they say. And you know what? I may be a slow cook. Sometimes it takes an hour.
I'm slow at chopping vegetables. That's what slows me down. But
and then sometimes less time. There's always something amazing. How about spicy shrimp and Korean rice cakes with cabbage and something called furikake?
Mm-hmm.
Don't know what that is, but that's the neat thing. You're going to get these new ingredients, these new techniques, and you're going to be introduced to new foods that you will love.
And if you love it, it comes with a complete step-by-step recipe with instructions that you can replicate yourself.
That. West African peanut chicken with sautéed kale and rice.
I think I had that.
That looks so good.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
Pork chops and garlic piccata with scallion rice and spinach. I want it! I hate doing these ads. They make me so hungry. Mm. Mushroom and chipotle pepper enchiladas with lime sour cream. Look, here's the deal. We're going to get you three meals free with free shipping. They ship to 99% of the continental United States. Sorry, Hawaii and Alaska. I'm sorry. But that's they want to make it fresh, right?
Yeah.
If you go to blueapron.com/twit, it's free shipping for three meals. blueapron.com/twit. All right, I am going to get online with my server at home and see how this photo thing works. And while I do, Jason Howell's got a review of a high-res audio streaming service. Remember last week he talked about this when he was talking about the Fender headphones. Here's his review of Tidal. Watch.
So being a lifelong musician, I've always felt like I had an ear for things like audio fidelity. With that, a bit of emptiness in the move to MP3 and compressed music formats, knowing deep down that I'm missing something in the audible spectrum, even if some people point to science to prove it's all in the mind. Science. But at the end of the day, the most important thing is that each listener feels fulfilled by what they listen to and how they listen to it. Tidal is one of the music streaming services created to appeal to people like me. People who want uncompromised sound quality beyond that of MP3. And I happen to have here these $300 Fender FX-A5 headphones to judge it with. But first, the app itself. This is Tidal's main What's New page with a carousel up top of new content. Below that, new tracks to hit the service, new albums, including David Bowie's new EP. I'll go ahead and add that to my favorites. And then I can also flick this switch so it's available to me offline. I want to do that. Beyond that, there are playlists galore, music videos, and movies and shows, which, to be honest, there's not a whole lot of those, so I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on that. And the side slide-out tray gives instant access to Tidal's full collection of all of those categories, as well as something they call Tidal Rising. That's a section devoted to up-and-coming artists who are looking to break through. When a track is playing, you get your standard collection of controls like repeat, randoms, scrub, and all that, as well as suggested tracks down below to expand what I'm listening to. But do you see under the runtime there where it says hi-fi? That's the magic of Tidal. Subscribers to the hi-fi service can then adjust settings to allow for high-fidelity versions of songs to come through in their sonic glory. And if that's happening, that little hi-fi will be lit up white. That means that you'll get FLAC lossless 16-bit 44.1 kilohertz playback of your music, the exact same as a compact disc, as opposed to lossy compression used in other services and formats like MP3. But the ages-old question, of course, do you actually hear a difference? This will differ based on who you ask and what hardware they use to listen. If you're listening to hi-fi quality through your MacBook speakers, you're not going to notice a thing. I threw on the Fender FX-A5 headphones and did A-B tests between tracks on Tidal and on Google Play Music to see the difference. And in my time, I absolutely noticed subtle, but I think impactful differences. High frequency information was more obvious, almost shimmery without distortion or harshness. Mid-range instruments had a clarity that dropped subtly when I skipped over to Google Play Music to play it over there. Again, this stuff is next to impossible to illustrate on a podcast. It's really up to your own ears. Tidal also just announced at CES 2017 a new higher resolution section for hi-fi subscribers in their desktop app only, for now, called Tidal Masters. That brings the quality up to 96 kilohertz, 24-bit master level quality to a limited library that should grow over time. Tidal is a bit pricey. For $9.99, you get the basic, well, they call it premium service, which has access to all that Tidal offers in its catalog, minus the access to high fidelity encoding. For $19.99 per month, you get all that lossless high-res glory. Tidal does have a 30-day free trial to see if your ears can actually tell the difference, so why don't you check it out? Try Tidal today in the Play Store now.
All right, thank you very much, Jason Howell. He's, of course, our host of All About Androids. He's an Android guru, although he's using an iPhone this month. You know that?
Poor guy, they swapped. Yeah.
We'll have to check in with him.
Yeah.
And, of course, he's on TNT Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Joining us right now, I'm really excited about this, Bodo Honan. Hello, Bodo. Good to talk to you.
Hi there.
Where are you calling from?
From Long Island, New York.
Long Island. But it doesn't sound like you have the Long Island accent there.
No, not at all. I was born and raised in Southern Africa, but moved, left home when I was 18 and then moved to Europe. All of the Caribbean for a while and then moved over here.
You sound like our producer, Jerry Wagley, who's been all over the world. Anyway, it's great to have you on. I love this story.
Yeah.
So how old is Lorelai, your daughter?
Lorelai's turned 6. So she's
a little girl. Oh.
Yeah, she's just a little girl.
Sweetie. And she got an illness that paralyzed her arm.
Yeah, it happened really suddenly. So she got sick a week before this all happened, and her sickness had gone away. And then the morning when this all happened, she complained that she can't move her arm. And we didn't think much of it. We thought maybe she fell and she bruised it. But by the end of the morning, her arm was completely paralyzed and her legs were starting to be paralyzed. She struggled to breathe. She wasn't speaking properly.
My.
So we rushed. My wife rushed her to the hospital. I was away on business at the time. But my wife rushed her to hospital. And by the time she got in the hospital, so this was just in a matter of a couple of hours, she had lost the use of her arm. Her breathing was really, really faint. Her voice was really faint. The left side of her face was paralyzed. And the doctors didn't know what was happening and what was wrong with her. Turned out she has acute flaccid myelitis, which is a very rare condition. It's a polio-like syndrome. About 100 or so kids have had it here in the U.S. so far. And so none of the doctors actually knew what was happening.
Holy cow.
But it was, so we went straight to the PICU, ICU, and that's when it all started.
So the good news is with physical therapy, can she recover the use of her arm?
Well, and that was really the start of it. So I'd quickly flown back, and speaking to the doctors and the specialists, they told us about this rare condition and told us that, you know, the only real form of treatment would be physiotherapy. So that night I spent the evening, you know, Googling all I could about this disease, this illness, and I managed to get hold of some specialists that had treated this condition out in California. And I also managed to get hold of a couple of parents that had children with the same condition. And reading up what they were telling about these kids, there was only about a 5% chance that these kids would have a full recovery. So yes, physiotherapy would help, but there would only be a 5% chance of a full recovery. So it wasn't good odds.
So you decided to take matters into your own hands.
Yeah.
But you have no robotics experience.
No, absolutely no robotics experience. But listen to podcasts and shows like this. So I knew what was able to be done. I just had no clue how to do it.
So where did you start? How did you start down this path of self-education and building technology for your daughter?
We just boiled down the problem. So we knew her shoulder was extremely weak. It couldn't carry any weight. Even the weight of her own arm would slowly pull it out of the socket. So my wife made a shoulder brace, a sleeve, and then we also used Kinesio tape, and we taped the shoulder. And with the shoulder brace and the Kinesio tape, we could keep the shoulder or the arm from pulling out of the socket. And we looked at that we could put about 150 grams of additional weight on the arm without there being any risk of it pulling out. So that was our target weight goal. Was we wanted to build something that was no more than 150 grams, and therefore wouldn't pull out her arm. We then measured her forearm. The weight was about 400 grams, so we knew that whatever we built would need to be able to pick 400 grams up and down several times an hour for at least 5 hours, because we wanted this whole device to be mobile as well. And then I guess one of the key points here was, and this was something that I had researched. Here's my daughter. She wants to say hi.
Hi, Lorelai, you sweetie. Oh, hi, Lorelai.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, you are the sweetest. Bodo, I can see why you would be so motivated. This is a father's love.
Yeah.
Boy. Oh, yeah, she wants to hear some more. Can you show us your arm, Lorelai? Does she have the robot on right now?
No, she doesn't, but we've got it here.
Oh, look at that.
We got the sleeve here. So this is the sleeve, and she puts it on her arm, and then she can control it using muscle sensors, and it can pull her arm up and down.
Wait a minute. You had never done this before, and you created this? Look at this.
Yeah.
So she controls this with her mind?
Well, she controls it with her mind using the signals going down to her muscles. And that was one of the key goals, because we wanted to increase the chances of rehabilitation to take place. And the only way to do that, and we researched this while in hospital, we saw that there were these trials going on where paraplegic individuals were given these exoskeleton suits and virtual reality, and they were Over a course of several months, they were able to start to use their own muscles.
So that's the key, right? Is to do it the way you would do it normally, to keep those nerves working and the mind connection working. You don't want to take over for her. You want to help her learn and get better at it.
So that looked like a 3D printed device. Is that what you ended up doing? Is 3D printing the shell there?
Yeah, we ended up 3D printing. And this was a challenge because we first tried to 3D print it to fit perfectly, to fit her arm perfectly, but then we battled to put it on her arm. So we ended up printing it flat using PLA plastic, and then I made a cast of her arm, and then we would put the plastic in boiling water and then mold it around the cast. There we go. And so that really worked really, really well, and it allows us to quickly tweak the fit. I can just take a hairdryer and heat it up a bit, or heat the joint up and tweak it a little if it gets too tight. And so that approach actually worked really, really well.
Now, in order to do this, obviously you had to enlist the help of some experts. How did you go about doing that?
Yeah, hundreds of experts. So
that's so great.
Again, we didn't know what we were doing. So we knew we needed X, Y, and Z, and we created a video and we shared this video with folks on Twitter and Facebook, and we started a Facebook page, and we had a whole number of questions and things we needed to figure out. And we just posted this online and asked people for advice. And I mean, literally within moments, people started to respond and help us. And people we had never met before started to help us. There's a good friend of ours now, Jose. He's from Mexico, and he's been helping us a great deal. He first taught us how to program the Arduino and wire up the Arduino, and we had initially built this separate arm rig so that we can test everything on the arm rig. And he helped us wire things up and program things up. But then we got help from Columbia University, helped us with the 3D design. Actuonix donated some of the actuators to us. The folks from various friends had donated things like the Xbox Kinect that we used as a 3D scanner so that we could scan the measurements of our arm in 3D. But we got help from all over. That was great.
This is amazing. The Facebook page is facebook.com/ Our Kids Can Do Anything.
And
it's a wonderful page. What do you do for a living, Bodo?
I run a nonprofit that works to empower children to reach for their dreams.
Nice.
And especially children that have absolutely nothing. So children in refugee camps, conflict zones, disaster areas.
Is that something you were doing before Lorelei's illness?
Yeah.
So you don't have any technical background, but obviously you have a background organizing. You have a little bit of a technical background.
Yeah, I do, and I was a programmer about 10 years ago.
Good,
but I gave it up for
honest work. Now, so you've been using this. The Arduino controls it. Her nerve impulses control it. And what kind of does she do exercises? What does she do with it?
Well, the idea was that she would use it for anything. So she would, it's a totally mobile unit. She can take it to school. She can go to the playground. She can do everything with it. And it would simply just assist her to move her arm up and down. And it uses her existing muscle signals. But I guess that was one of the biggest challenges because the muscle signal going to her bicep and tricep was extremely, extremely weak.
Right.
And it was so weak that we would pick up her heart beating as opposed to her muscle, or we would pick up some random electrical signal coming from the microwave or the light or the computer or whatever was close to her, the air conditioner. And so,
wow,
that was a that was a big challenge for us, and that it took us quite a while to sort to work out that problem. And we managed to sort it out by using using machine learning. So instead of just using a singular electrode to look out for a signal from the arm, and then this singular electrode would normalize the signal and it would filter out the noise. But whenever you filter out the signal, you use a lot of information. And somewhere within that noise was this signal that we had to find. So instead of just using the one, we used several all around the arm. And we fed all of this raw data into a unit that a company called COAT helped us with. And with this unit here, you can see on the screen. So you see these 18 electrodes on her arm, and she's moving she's sending signals to her arm, and the unit is able to pick that up and move this virtual arm. And so, yeah, on the screen you can see how it works.
This is remarkable.
So what kind of progress have you seen? Have you seen progress in her arm strength?
Yeah, and this is the best Christmas present ever. So beginning of December, Lorelei comes up to my wife and I, and she says, "Hey, look what I can do." And she pulls up her arm all the way up and down without the assistive arm.
And, oh my God.
Immediately, my wife and I, we start crying.
Yes.
And we absolutely...
You're making me cry.
it was amazing. And, you know, since that moment, she's really progressing by leaps and bounds now to the stage where she no longer needs the arm brace. So she's getting physiotherapy at school, and the doctors and everyone's amazed at her progress, and so are we, and we're thrilled. So I guess now what we're doing is during this process, we met a lot of other kids that could use something like this. And so we're reaching out to them, and we're trying to help them to see, you know, if they could see the same progress. And
Poto, what an inspiring story. And that just shows you how a father's love, and I'm sure mother's love as well, can make such a difference. And then pulling a community together, and how tech can really be a positive force. I mean, in every respect, this is such an inspiring and heartwarming story.
Well, and to know, just as you sought out people when you got her diagnosis, that I'd imagine it's already happened, but people will look for their diagnosis and they'll discover you and what you've built now.
Yeah.
Facebook.com/ourkidscandoanything. And I presume you're going to continue to update us on Lorelei's progress. And now I think the progress of this incredible venture and how you're helping kids in other ways. This is so great. Poto, thank you so much for sharing this with us.
Absolutely.
Really inspiring. Thanks, Lorelei. See you later.
Lorelei, they want to say bye. Okay. She's out playing.
She's gone.
You could see why you're inspired. And, you know, I know when a child is ill, and, I'm a father, when a child is ill, there's nothing worse. And to be able to take action, to do something, to get all this support, and then to have it make a difference, wow. I mean, congratulations. Hi. Nice to see you. Bye, Lorelei, you darling. Oh, my goodness, is she sweet. Just, thank you, Lorelei.
Just a very quick thing. She wanted to show you. So instead of working on her arm, she asked me, can we build a suit to help her fly? So she wanted to fly around.
It's a Barbie drone. Yes, Lorelei, you know what? You can do anything now.
So this is a Barbie drone. This is the first prototype, and we said, I'll think about building a life-size one.
What a doll.
Well, to be fair, you did say our kids can do anything, and flying counts as
You set
something.
That up, Poto. So, you set it up. Thank you, Poto Honan. Really appreciate it, and congratulations to you and Lorelei. Facebook.com/ourkidscandoanything. Thank you, Poto. Bye, Lorelei, you darling. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, I'm going to cry. Oh, my God. That was amazing. Amazing.
So I've been tippity-tapping on my phone, and you know what? Synology will totally do what Frank wants to do. The nice thing about this is secure HTTPS. It is a server that is local to the casino.
It's
not
casino.
On the cloud.
You put the Synology DS photo application. First of all, you need to get a Synology NAS.
Yeah.
Disk Station Manager will allow you to install their photo station. You install the DS photo app, a free app, on your iPhone or Android phone. It will do photo backup. In fact, I'm now doing photo backup. But will also let you upload an individual image. And when you take that image and select it for upload, let me see if I can do that here. Actually, the easiest way to do it is to do it from the photo app, the photo roll. So let's get that picture of me and Frank, right? There it is. And I'll use the sharing sheet to share this to DS Cloud. You can absolutely, I'm doing it the wrong way now. I had it all set up. You can absolutely rename it. You can add a description. Hmm. It will upload with it. You don't have to worry about people deleting it locally. It doesn't delete it on the server. And it will be completely secure. So I think this is actually the best solution. It does require you buying some additional hardware. Yeah. You already got how many? 20 iPod Touches.
More than 20.
Yeah, more than 20. He probably doesn't even know the count. Let me just, I see how you do it here. Let me go back to this. I can pick a photo to, no, that's not it. The other thing you can do is name albums, so each tenant could have their own album. Mm. And then when you go to your website, you can see the albums on here. It's still uploading, so it hasn't done yet. And you can show them on the screen. You can download them locally. I think this actually would probably be the best solution because you're not dependent on anybody. Google,
right.
Facebook, anybody.
Especially if you are privacy sensitive, which, the casino is. So
I would hope so.
Keeping their data locally is a big advantage.
So it's a really, once again, Synology to the rescue. They really do some amazing stuff. That's Disk Station Manager, Synology, the Synology Network Attached Storage. Will absolutely do
check
everything
out,
that you wanted to do. You can name it and have a description and have all of the details, including the geolocation. Everything that's already in the photo goes up with it.
Boy, I hope the casino can find the money to buy a Disk Station. I hope they can.
It's so tough for casinos these days, right?
Yeah. It's hard out there.
Our show. Boy, wasn't that inspiring? Oh, my
that
gosh.
Was,
I'm literally teared up here.
That might be the most amazing thing I've ever seen on a tech show.
What's cool is that he wasn't like, a builder of artificial limbs or anything. He just, he did what is the beauty of technology. He asked for help.
Yeah.
And people stepped forward and helped him, and he did it, and as a result, a little girl she's actually doing bicep curls.
And just imagine the next time that happens to somebody, when they Google for that, they're going to see this whole community.
Yep. He solved all those problems.
Yeah.
Coming up in just a little bit, we're going to watch Becky Worley, Mike Elgin, and Greg Farrow try to defuse a bomb. Well, not really a bomb. A virtual
VR bomb.
A VR bomb. But first, a word from our sponsor, Rocket Mortgage. I love Rocket Mortgage. They have been a great sponsor for us, mostly because they realize that the people who watch our shows on Twit are their definitely most likely customers. They're people who want to do things online. They don't want to, if you want to get a home loan or refi, you don't want to go into the bank, bring a box of papers, go to the attic, go through and find your pay stubs. Do you even have your pay stubs? No, you want to do it all digitally. And there are some real advantages to do it digitally. So Rocket Mortgage comes from a trusted lender, one of the best in the country, Quicken Loans. I'm sure you know the name. If you go to quickenloans.com/NSS, you'll see all their J.D. Power awards for customer satisfaction. They're really good. You'll also see a completely online mortgage approval process where you can literally do this on your phone. You could do it at an open house. You could do it on your couch. You could do it in your jammies. You go on your phone or your tablet or your computer. You go to quickenloans.com/NSS and you click a button. You can submit your pay stubs, your bank statements digitally with a touch of a mouse. And it's friction-free, but once you've got it set up, you can even there's little sliders that you could choose the rate and the length of your loan. You can completely customize it. And then within minutes, get approved for that custom solution just for you. I love this. In fact, I got to tell you, it's so opposite from my experiences in the past of buying a house where it took us 6 weeks to get our last home loan. It was crazy. Rocket Mortgage, believe me, that's what I'm going to do next time. QuickenLoans.com/NSS, Equal Housing Lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030, Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Thank you for bringing the ancient loan process into the 21st century. All right, Ready to do this? We're going to have some fun.
Let's do it.
This was we pre-recorded this because we weren't sure how it would work. PlayStation VR and a great game called Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes. Becky Worley from Good Morning America. Mike Elgin from BecomingNomad.com, our good friend. And Greg Farrow from the Packet Pushers Net. We played the game. I think it was my turn first. Watch. All right, it's time once again to play the game called Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes. So far, nobody has exploded. We got Greg Farrow here. He is from the Packet Pushers Network.
How are you doing?
He's got an English accent, but he's really from Australia. You figure it out. Becky Worley from ABC's Good Morning America. Always a thrill. And Mike Elgin.
From Good Night America.
From Good Night America. No. He is digital nomad Mike Elgin, right. beingnomadic.com. And we are ready to play the game. The way the game works, we're going to play it on a Sony PlayStation VR. One of us, and I think it's going to be Becky, so go ahead and take your... Oh, actually, you're going to be the guinea pig.
I'm the first up.
You'll see the bomb. You'll have to describe it to us. We have these... By the way, top secret, we got these from Edward Snowden. These are the bomb... bomb defusal...
You got them from Edward Snowden. They're not top secret anymore.
Not anymore. The bomb defusal manual. In here, everything you need to know to defuse the bomb.
I trust this stuff. It looks like it's in Cyrillic. I think the Russians have
done it. It's crazy stuff, and there's a lot of pages, and it can get very complicated. So it's going to require good communication between us. We can't see the bomb, and you can't see the manual.
Yep.
You'll describe the bomb. We'll look for the appropriate defusing instructions, and we'll try to give them to you in a way that you can use them. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right, we have 5 minutes for this bomb. There are 6 modules. This is, believe it or not, the easy one.
What?
The easy one. Let's play our game.
Are we ready?
Yes.
Yep. Okay. I have wires.
Wires. How many wires?
Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 wires.
6 wires.
Okay. What color? Is there a yellow?
There's 2 yellows.
Okay.
1 red, 1
Then green. Are there no red wires?
There's 1 red wire.
Cut the 4th wire.
X to cut?
Yep.
Yes.
And it's green light, right?
Yes.
Good.
Yay.
1 down, 5 to go.
Where are you next?
What other modules are there?
Becky's ready for the Hurt Locker, man.
I'm going. I've got 4 characters. I've got Alien with a shield to the left.
Alien with a shield to the left.
I've got X with a line through it.
X with a line through it.
I've got a reverse B with a T.
Okay, lower place.
Reverse B with a T.
We know where you are. Okay, go.
And I've got a Sigma.
And a Sigma. Yes, so I think he's in column 4.
What's a Sigma? 4.
That's column 4, is it not? Sigma is a B, kind of with a wavy,
a 6, yeah.
A wavy hat, a 6.
Like a 6, yeah.
All right.
Oh, I don't know.
So
I
do the 6.
Column, yeah, 4.
Do the 6.
The B with the cross, with the BT.
Yep.
Alien guy.
Alien with a shield.
Yep.
And the X.
Done. And green.
We're good. All right.
Oh, we are.
What else you got?
I need to look around. Okay. Oh.
I feel like we should do this with a real bomb. That would raise the stakes a little bit.
Or at least electrocution of some kind.
Lisa, if we blow up, would you come and slap the back of our heads?
I've got keys, characters again.
Characters?
I've got smiley face.
Oh, he's got another one of those. Okay, you could have 2 of the same module. Yeah. Yep. All right, smiley face, yes.
Alien with a shield.
Alien with a shield.
Paragraph mark. Half a paragraph mark.
Hold on.
Column 4 again.
Yep.
Because there's only 1 smiley face.
6 delta.
Yeah, okay, we got it. So start with the sigma.
Sigma, yeah.
Paragraph.
Paragraph.
Alien with a shield.
Alien with a shield.
Smiley face.
And a green light.
Yay!
We should play this with that watch that shocks you.
Yeah, exactly. The Pavlov or whatever it's called.
We need to raise the stakes.
1, 2, 3. Yeah,
exactly.
I can't.
What else you got?
Serial number on the side.
Maybe an electrified chair.
No, there's nothing to do with the serial number. Keep moving around.
Okay, I've got a wires.
Okay, more wires.
Complicated wires?
4 wires. Black, white, blue, black.
Black, white, blue, black. Okay, 4 wires. There is no red wire. No yellow. There's 1 blue wire?
1 blue wire.
Cut the first wire.
Yes.
All right, next module. We're halfway there. How much time is left, Greg?
2 minutes.
Jeez Louise, we got to hurry it up.
I can't work out what I've got to do for the 6th module.
Got to move around to it. The serial number is not a module. There might be something on the back. So rotate it around.
There's a hold button and a press button.
Okay, go to the hold button, select that.
Yep.
Okay, you see a button that says hold.
And it's got red, pulsing red around it.
Is it red and it says hold, press it and immediately release it.
Well, you're on buttons.
Okay, that's green.
Next one.
Dang, you're good, Leo.
Okay. And then next one is a button, is a press.
Okay. Did you see it? Blue. If none of the above apply, hold the button and refer to releasing a hold button. I think none of them apply. We
press
see
red with a red pulsing around it.
Hold it and then let me
And then you say, what? Press it. Yep. What color is the strip?
Red.
Release it when the countdown timer has a 1 in any position.
Coming to 121.
Not confident.
One, two, one, go.
Ah! Okay, what does it say? It says the button says press.
It's a red button. Says press with a red line around it.
Oh, shoot. We're getting close.
It's 50
seconds. See a button is blue. It says abort. If there's more than one battery and the button says detonate. If the button is white and there's a lit indicator with label car. If there are two batteries on the bomb and there's a lit indicator with FRK. The button is yellow. Hold the button.
If none of the above apply, hold the button and refer to it.
That's what I did. And then what color is the strip?
Red. Orange.
5. Do it when the countdown timer.
Release when the countdown timer has a 1 in any position.
Oh, it's not. He's colorblind.
That's what I'm thinking.
It's yellow?
Yeah.
5
in any position.
Oh, one more, quick.
I got it. What am I? I don't even know what I'm...
Can we do 6?
Yes!
Oh, my God, we just made it.
Wow.
I'm Did colorblind. You know you were colorblind?
Yes.
And that's one Galaxy Note 7 that will not kill its owner, okay? That's how hard it is. That was fun, but I had not. I remember you can't see the bomb,
right?
And I didn't. He was screwing up badly.
Yeah, it's a miracle that you guys lived.
It's a miracle we lived. He was not describing that properly. That's a fun game. It's available on pretty much every VR platform, including Google Gear, or Samsung Gear, Google Daydream. We played it on the PlayStation 4 VR. I think there's a Vive and Oculus version of it. So if you ever want, you want to play next time we do that?
Yeah, that would be great.
Hey, let me show you. I uploaded the picture of me and Frank. This is what it would look like on your computer. So you see, I named it Me and Frank. I named it Winna Winna Chicken Dinner. You could, if you wanted to, you could give it stars. You can add location, people, general tags. You get all that information, including the GPS coordinates, if that's of value to you. That's from the iPhone. That was all automatically uploaded. In its full resolution, I think this is the solution.
Yeah.
Anyway, winna winna chicken dinner, Frank. Mm-hmm. All right, let's do another call for help. It might not take me a full half hour to solve that one. Peter in Milwaukee. Hello, Peter.
Hello. Hi, Leo.
Oh, I love your Japanese cherry blossom prints. Those are very pretty.
That's amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Are you at work?
No, at home. That's the decorating that my wife did in the back.
She's got some good taste nice. There, Peter. So, what can we do for you?
So, I bought an Apple Watch back in October. The new features with the GPS, so it could track my running. One of the reasons why I got that is I didn't want to have to haul around like a big phone at the gym. I wanted to be able to download music locally and also track my fitness. That's all great, but when it came to like listening to the same track over and over, it got a little boring. That's when I wanted to look into features of the same functionality for podcasts. When I started looking into it, it did not seem like a simple solution where you could just download podcasts. So really what I'm calling in is there some way to actually do that on the Apple Watch in an easy way or a third-party application?
Yeah, because the whole reason you got the new Series 2 is so you didn't have to bring the phone with you, right? Because it's got the GPS.
Correct, yeah.
So this has how much? 4 gigs, right? But only 2 is available
for
music? I
think it lets you have a couple gigs of files stored on it, of music files.
And you can have any Bluetooth. If you had the AirPods, for instance, they would automatically pair to it.
Absolutely.
Or you could pair a Bluetooth headset to it, right?
Right, any Bluetooth headset will work with it.
But if you connect it, what you'll find is it only copies music.
Right, exactly right.
Not podcasts.
WatchOS 3 lets you copy multiple playlists, but it's only music. There's no Apple Podcasts app for the Apple Watch. Right,
Apple?
Now.
How are you going to get your twit on here, Apple?
Yeah,
you're incomparable.
It's a problem.
How are you going to do that?
It's a problem.
So what do you do?
Well, the bad news is right now you basically have to use that music path to do this. So what you need to do is go into iTunes and select some podcasts and choose Command-I or Get Info, right? And then say that they're music. There's a little media kind pop-up, and you need to change it from podcast to music.
So hit that drop-down, if you would, there, Anthony. And
all right. Well.
Oh, so it only says music. If it said podcast, you could choose music.
You change it to music, and then also the remember playback position is good because that way when you go back to it later.
Oh, I was going to say, that would be a negative.
It won't start from the beginning. Bad for music, right?
One of the things spoken word does that music doesn't do is keeps your position.
Exactly.
So turning it to music, but check the box that says remember playback
right.
position.
So this is not the best solution, but it's right now I think the only one that will really work is you take your podcasts, you mark them as music, you put them in a playlist, like a podcast playlist, and then you sync that to your Apple Watch, which probably means you have to go through, you either need to sync to your phone via iTunes or you need to use iCloud Music Library. Not fun, but if you can get it on your phone,
and then
your phone
the
will
watch
transfer
app.
It,
oh, it just
to the
does
watch
it automatically. You don't have to
you've got to select that playlist
in the watch app.
In the watch. Okay. Now, you would think third party apps would do this, but as far as I know, no third party podcast apps do this yet. And the reason is, from what I hear from my sources, I can exclusively report, there are some bugs in watchOS 3 that prevent reliable music playback on third party apps or podcast playback on third party apps. So my guess is that the moment that Apple
fixes that,
ships their own podcast app for the Apple Watch, it'll be fixed.
Magically.
But in the meantime, the only real reliable audio player on the watch is the music app. Yeah. And that means you need to fake it and say that your podcasts are music.
So you go in the watch app and there's a music section and you say, you know, here's the, you choose the playlist.
You pick your playlists.
Like.
Right.
So I have classical folk purchased in rock, so I selected folk and that's synced automatically up to 2 gigabytes.
Yeah. So it's like old school podcasts where you have to manage it all yourself manually instead of just having it happen automatically.
So weird that Apple doesn't have a podcast app for the watch. That seems like
I know, right? It seems to have not been a priority for them, but I hope that they will do it because it's a natural. I agree with you. I've had those same thoughts, which is I go for a run and I really don't want to have my phone in my pocket.
Let me throw you a curve. Will this work with audiobooks? You listen to Audible.
Yeah, right now. Same thing though.
So you can say to an audiobook your music
if
now.
You've got it in iTunes.
If you have it, in
basically,
iTunes.
If it's an MP3,
because that's all I really would put on here. And one audiobook is usually less than a gig, so you could have one or two books in here. That's what I would listen to.
Yeah,
if I exercise.
Keep in mind, it doesn't sync back, so it's this is old school. If you then listen on another device,
it doesn't know where the position is.
Well, I wonder. I bet it wouldn't. No, because it's music
at that point,
and it doesn't sync the music positions.
Best we can do, but at least you can do it.
I have hope, though. I have hope that there'll be a watchOS update. Hopefully, before they do watchOS 4. Because I know that podcast app developers have investigated this and have filed bugs with Apple about it because they want to do it. They want to have their apps on the iPhone sync with the Apple Watch, and it just seems like it's not.
Well, like some Marco, I'm sure would like to have Overcast.
Marco would love
to
do that. Yeah. I'm positive, but it sounds like you can get it to play, but there's some questions about whether you can get it to stay playing. That are just Apple needs to fix some of the media stuff. The media stuff in the watchOS. Not as advanced as the media stuff in iOS.
You know, when Apple gets its $200 billion back from Ireland or wherever it's stored, maybe they could put a billion, just a billion. That's just one half of 1%.
They could get that billion from Qualcomm.
Or from Qualcomm. And just put a billion into fixing iTunes, music, all of this stuff.
And we'll put podcasts for Apple Watch on the list. That would be a nice one.
All we ask Apple is $100 million for podcasts. That's all. I hope that helps, Peter.
Yeah, thank you. One last request. I was hoping I could get a selfie like Frank. And you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I could do a selfie for you, too. We have his email, right? All right. Yeah, brilliant. And I'll upload it to the Synology. All right, here we go. This is good. This could be our new thing. We could do this every time here. Jason, you should get in this,
all
too.
Right.
All right, come on over here. Hey! All right, I took three. One of them will work.
Yeah, the one of them was a little shaky.
Yeah.
Real-time follow-up?
I think that's all right.
Real-time follow-up from the chat room. There is apparently an app called Watch Player.
Watch Player.
That claims to do this. My guess is that it's kind of not great, but hey, if you could get it to work, then that would be something you could try.
Chat room, you rock.
Good job, chat room.
Yay.
But my guess is they're going to run into the same bugs, which is sometimes you'll just lose control of it, and it's buggy right now. It'll get better.
Thanks, Peter.
Hey, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
We'll send you that picture as soon as it uploads to my Synology.
Yeah. There it is.
Thank you.
I'm sensing a theme with this episode.
That's so cool.
That's amazing.
So cool. I didn't know this. Look at this. So it has the additional information, the GPS information, but then there's a button here that says show more. Did you know all this stuff was saved on the iPhone? X resolution, Y resolution, software, YCBCR positioning.
Yeah, that's all your XIF data.
IFD port. This is shutter. Look at this. GPS longitude, latitude, the altitude, the timestamp, the speed reference, I was
bearing
going,
bearing reference really blows
I was
me
going
away.
0 kilometers an hour when it, I did that.
It'll show you which direction you were facing when you took the picture.
I've never seen all
compass,
this
yeah.
stuff. Look at that.
And winner, winner, chicken dinner. Of
and of course, the name.
Your
of
metadata.
I will say, your metadata, baby.
I never metadata I didn't like.
No, I know what you mean. We'll send that along to you, Peter. Thank you. If you want to get your tech questions answered. Now, we're not sure who's going to be on next week.
Ooh.
Well,
that's good. It's a mystery.
Like that. One of our players is on the DL. We're hoping he'll be fit enough to be back next. Actually, it's Andy Inaka. We're not sure if he's coming out. If he's out, we'll have Andy next week. If not, Father Robert Ballas there. So it's going to be somebody.
It's going to be good.
Wonderful. And if you want to ask a question on next week's show, here's how.
Need tech help? The new screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
Well, speak of the devil. Actually, I shouldn't say that. Speak of the father. Here's Father Robert Ballas with his review of the OmniCharge.
No matter what kind of geek you are, you probably have a lot of these. Gadgets, phones, tablets, notebooks, surfaces, whatever it might be. There are some products out there, very good products from companies like Anker or Energy or Energizer that can keep us powered on the go. But I've always wanted one power pack, to rule them all. Well, I think I may have finally found it in the Omni 20. This is from a company called OmniCharge that I found at CES down in the Innovation Pavilions, and they raised over $3 million on Indiegogo. With that money, they created a product that really does charge all of my stuff. It's got multiple ways to charge from a massive 20.4 amp hour battery. It's a lithium ion power cell inside. First of all, I've got two fast charging USB ports. That's 5 volts at 3 amps each, 15 watts. That's not enough just to fast charge my phone, but you can even keep a new MacBook charged up through its USB-C port. It's also got this high power port on the side that I can connect to my notebook. It's got connectors for both the old MagSafe connector and the magnetic connector of a Surface, which means I can keep my notebooks charged. And it's got this, which is an AC adapter. If you've got that odd device that you just can't seem to find a tip for, well, just use the AC adapter off the OmniCharge and you're good to go. In addition, if you've got a wireless device, but you hate carrying around those little wireless bases because it's just kind of silly, it's built into the top here. That means your phone, your watch, your little gadget that you created that uses wireless Qi standard will charge right off the top of the power pack. But that's not where it ends. Yes, it's got a tip system. Yes, it's got plenty of power to go. But what I really love is the fact that I can control everything from this little OLED screen. Now, this screen is going to give me all the information I need to know about the power pack. Yes, the temperature. Yes, how much power it has left. But it also shows me what voltage I've set for the output port. And it will show me how long it will take to charge. It will show me what kind of draw I'm putting on the battery. And it will even show me what options I've enabled for charging. This is definitely not for the noob because you can destroy your device if you send the wrong power. But if you have even a little bit of experience with devices, if you are a gadget hog, if you love powering everything from a single point of energy, then the OmniCharge 20 might be for you. I'm going to give this a full rundown in about a month. I'm going to carry this in my regular pack. It's going to be traveling with me, and I'm going to see if it survives powering my laptop, my tablet, my phone, and all the gadgets that come in my travel kit. Until then, I'm Father Robert Ballas here, the Digital Jesuit. You can find me on KnowHow on the Twit TV network at twit.tv/KH. Until then, back to Leo over there.
No, I'm over here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Father Robert. Jason Snell, it's been a lot of fun.
It's been a lot of fun. We have done a lot today.
Tomorrow, day after tomorrow, you're going to be back for iOS Today.
iOS Today, yeah.
Because Megan is in Washington for the Women's March with her daughter, which is cool. You're going to bring this along, I hope.
Yeah, we'll talk about it a little bit. This is the Bridge keyboard for the iPad that turns my iPad into a actual laptop.
And you have the Big Pro.
I do.
At this point, it looks a lot like a MacBook Air.
Yeah, my complaint about a lot of these cases is you got to clip them in, you know, and then they're in there and it's hard to get out. Where this one, I can just pull it out.
Oh.
And now
you broke it.
Now I'm no.
No.
That's it.
Now you're ready to go.
Yep. Well, I'll just use the iPad now.
When you see something like this, and it's a good keyboard, I don't know why Apple doesn't make a keyboard like that, but when you see something like
question.
This. You really see Apple's goal of turning this into the next your next laptop.
Yeah, all of a sudden I have a 13-inch laptop that runs iOS. It's pretty great. And then I can pull it off and You know, again, this is for people who use a Windows convertible. It's not.
It's a lot like a Surface.
It's not surprising, but yeah. But Apple has kept the Mac and all of its designs separate from the iPad and the iPhone, and this is this is us forcing it back together.
Do you think, and this has happened in the past at Apple, that there are just separate divisions that have gone their separate ways, like Mac OS and iOS?
I don't think so. I think, in fact, it's more that they view the iOS stuff as the future, and the Mac stuff is sort of like classic for people who like that sort of thing. So I think their feeling is a convertible touchscreen Mac is not something they want to invest in, because if you want a touchscreen something, get an iPad. And they think most Mac users just kind of want it the way they want it. It definitely is. I get why they're doing it, because they have the two operating systems, and I get why Microsoft doesn't, because they only have the one.
You're saying it's us. It's our fault.
I think you could argue that it's like old people who love PCs don't want it to change.
Hello, that's me.
And so, like, why, if I buy a Mac because it's a standard laptop like I've been using for 20 years, if they do something weird with it,
you won't be happy.
I mean, you could argue that that's what happened with the MacBook Pro a little bit, is that they did some weird stuff, and people are like, this touch bar thing, why'd you do that?
I wish we could I want to do a petition, because I want them to just bring me the cheese grater. Bring back the cheese grater with modern processors, and then I could put all the drives in it I want. I could put all the whatever graphics card I want.
It may happen.
That's the one.
I don't think it'll be the cheese grater, but I would
be. It could be.
I would think that there might be a new Mac Pro that's a little bit of a back step from the old one.
There's nothing wrong with the cheese grater.
I love the cheese grater.
That's a classic, right?
Who doesn't like cheese?
Who doesn't like cheese? Let's get some mailbag questions in here.
Jerry
Wagley, our producer, doing his perfect. Like, you should be playing. You should be curling. You should be playing curling. Perfect shot. Oh, and we didn't have any pussycat hats. So, but we've got some animals.
Oh, man.
There's a panda, and I don't know what the hell that is. Oh, it's a dinosaur.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's our hats. I don't think we're going to wear those. It's too hot for hats. But we do have three. Is this right? Three? Pick one, and then pick another one. And I'll do this one.
Okay.
I'm lazy.
I lost.
This is the bonus question. You're going to do number one there.
All right, number one. Is there any standard maintenance that you perform on your Macs that has now become, or has that now become unnecessary?
Oh, that's a great question.
This is from Angelo. So standard maintenance used to be, you do all sorts of things on PCs and Macs. You defrag.
Not anymore.
You'd run disk cleaners and things like that.
Remember, for a while we had Cocktail? The app that would delete old caches and temp files.
Right. Temp files, log files. Caches.
Not anymore.
In fact, you know, one of the big new features in macOS Sierra was that they basically Sherlocked all that stuff.
Right.
They replaced it all. So now
I got one for you.
Now they actually like delete your logs automatically. And in fact, if you go to About This Mac and click on Storage, they have a whole new thing that finds big files, finds duplicate files, and offers to delete them for you. So you don't really need anything else at that point.
You may occasionally want to do an unerase. But that's not a maintenance thing. That's just in case of emergency. But here's one that we used to always recommend. Disk repair. Do you do that anymore?
They've tried to make it something that you don't do.
I think they took it out.
Yeah, I think you can. I think the idea now is you do recovery partition and you scan your disk if you have a problem with it.
So we used to run Disk Utility.
Right.
And there was a verify. Let's see. Is it in there anymore? Verify the Mac. Yeah, you still have some disk repair.
I think you can repair when you're booted into the...
First aid, they call it now.
Into the recovery partition.
Would you like to run first aid?
But Apple has built all this in.
Yeah. Go ahead and do it. What could possibly go wrong?
Oh, geez.
Oh, boy.
So,
what disk
repair used to do is check file permissions, make sure they hadn't flipped. Sometimes bits would flip.
Sometimes permission stuff can happen, but that mostly is an urban legend at this point. You know, macOS 10 has been around so long now that most of that stuff has been covered by Apple.
This is not, you know, I didn't know this was in here. This is relatively new. I would probably run first aid once a quarter or so, or anytime anything acts a little strange.
It can't hurt. And again, I really recommend rebooting from the recovery partition, which most modern Macs have. When you boot up, hold down Command R.
Okay.
It boots into a separate partition. It's not your main drive.
So it's not being used, so you can really check it.
And then you can check it and fix things, and that's the ideal time to do it. And then you reboot back into the main partition.
So if anything's acting a little squirrely, or just once in a while, boot into the recovery partition with Command-R, and then run disk first aid. It's part of the disk utility.
Yeah, but beyond that, I think the number one maintenance thing I do is delete files when my SSD fills up, and Apple provides tools for that.
Right.
So, you know, that's about it.
Yeah. Apple has trim built in now, so you don't have to even, you know, one of the recommendations Alan Malventano, our SSD expert, had, and this was kind of wild. He did this a few months ago. He mentioned this on the new screensavers, is even though you don't need to defrag anymore, and you certainly don't need to defrag on an SSD because it's random access.
Right.
But if you happen to run defrag on an SSD, it has the benefit of forcing a trim. So if your SSD seems to be slowing down, you could do that. But I think don't. I think you're more likely to have problems.
I agree.
Then you're going to fix anything.
Especially on a Mac, you've got Apple is writing the software, and they know exactly what models of SSD are in their computers, and they are doing what they think is best, and it probably is, because they are able to control both hardware and software.
That's why you use a Mac.
Yeah, it's different if you have install a third-party SSD or something, but if you're using the disk that Apple provided, I think Apple's going to take care of it
Timmy
for you.
Knows best. What's the other one?
All right, number two. From Andrew, have you guys verified that the AirPods downmix to mono if you're only wearing one? It doesn't seem to work for me when I tested it.
Huh.
We're going to go back to the Beatles again, another callback in this show, because I always listen to Norwegian Wood.
In mono?
When I want to test whether it's mono or stereo.
Because
the sitar is on one, is in your left ear.
Bring me my iPhone.
And the acoustic guitar is in your right
ear. Should we test it?
So I can verify there are occasionally circumstances. If you're listening in stereo and you take one out and lay it down, sometimes it won't go directly to mono, but it tries.
Okay.
It tries. Most of the time it works. If you put one back in the case, it absolutely works. Or
I've
if you only
that.
Take one out, it will be in mono.
Because it bloops at you, right, when you put the ear back in, except sometimes it doesn't, so you take it out and you put it in. It's kind of, it just blooped at me.
Yeah, there's some inconsistencies, but generally, this is how it's supposed to work. If you take one out and then play, it should be in mono. And when you take
listen
it and put it back
Norwegian
in,
Norwegian Wood,
it should go to stereo.
Okay, let me try again. Listen to Norwegian Wood. Shouldn't that play it?
I don't know.
Oh, it's not in my music. I'm sorry.
Well, that's it. Well. Find something that you know that is a really
extreme
good stereo pan.
A lot of Beatles stuff is because it was recorded in mono, and then they remixed it in stereo. They just
they pushed it 100%.
They turned the pan all the way to the left and all the way to the right.
And that was in those days. They were really trying to show off stereo effects.
Look,
they don't do that
look
now.
It's stereo.
But regardless of that, that's how it's supposed to work, Andrew.
Yeah.
It is supposed to work where you get mono
and
when
it does
you only
mostly
have one
work
ear
that
in
way for you, huh?
Yeah. Same with the microphones. The microphones, it's smart enough to know if you've only got one in, it uses that microphone. If you've got both in, it can pick which one it thinks sounds better.
All right. I know I have it in Google Music. Norwegian. I didn't have it
Nobody
in
else
Apple
is going to be able to hear it.
But yeah, but I will, and that's all that matters, right? Norwegian Wood. This bird has flown.
That's the one.
Remastered or the original?
Doesn't matter. They're both.
They're both in extreme stereo.
When I was a kid, we always would just unplug the left speaker so we could hear Norwegian Wood without George Harrison's
Okay,
sitar.
I hear something in this ear and nothing in this ear. So if I take this out,
it'll pause.
Paused. Nothing's happening. Did it pause? So I should play again? Yeah. And I put this in, and the sitar is now in both ears.
And now, what did you do? You ruined everything.
I screwed it up. Okay, sitar's in this ear.
Yeah.
So if I take this ear out, I should hear sitar in this ear.
You're going to have to, it'll pause, so you're going to have to play it again. But yes.
I have to back it up. Okay, should be. Isn't it good, Norwegian Wood? It's coming from over there. No, it's not doing it.
Okay, now put it in the case.
Oh, but put it in the case. All right.
Get your floss out.
Because I'm now getting right channel only. Oh, pause again. I hear sitar!
So sometimes putting it in the case is the thing that...
Got it.
Because in fact, even when you hold it in your hand, sometimes it's got a proximity sensor, and it doesn't know the difference between you holding it in your hands and putting it in your ear. And
maybe it thinks it's in my ear.
So it thinks it's in your ear.
Or my hand ear.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
one of
probably
those.
What it is.
But if you put it in there, then
it knows, oh, you're not using
it. It's in mono mode, and it will
so,
switch
so
to mono
Renee
mode.
Ritchie's hack with this is, because you get 5 hours, is he gets 10 hours by using one ear at a time.
I've heard that for long-distance runners who want to listen to stuff, as they listen to
more.
One earbud at a time.
Yeah, I actually really like
it. You can also
these.
Share it with your friends. If
yes.
you've got a friend, you can both like take a walk or something
but
and have
if
one
I
ear.
Did that with you, you'd get sitar, but I wouldn't.
That's true, although you can put your iPhone in mono mode if you're really listening to the Beatles. Probably more appropriate for podcasts or something like that that's in mono.
Voice.
Yeah.
Are you ready for a bonus question?
I am.
This is from Anon.
Oh, that's my favorite.
It's an odd name. Don't name your kid Anon.
No.
Or if your last name is Amos, it would really be a bad idea.
How about just a question mark?
Anon? Wondering how charging cycles work. Will charging the AirPods every time they're placed in the case all burn through their cycles? That's actually an interesting question. We were talking, remember, with Kyle Weens of iFixit, who said, really, there's no way you're going to ever be able to upgrade the battery this thing because it's all glued in there.
Yeah.
So it's unlikely Apple will ever offer, as it does for the iPhone, battery replacement.
Right.
So how long is this going to last? And it's kind of a question mark.
Yeah, I think, well, we don't know for sure, but the way modern battery technology works, I think people get confused. It used to be that you would need to discharge. You remember those days? They would recommend that you do a full discharge of your battery,
NiCADs.
And then bring them back up again.
Yeah, well, you don't have to do that. No memory effect.
And that was a
anymore.
Battery cycle. But since we don't have the memory effect, essentially, it's no different if you drain them to zero and back up 10 times, or if you drain them halfway and back up 20 times.
Right.
It's the same. They're rated for hundreds, if not thousands, of cycles. And
well, we don't know. Apple's never said.
Right. So we don't know how long they'll last. But what I have pretty good confidence that you don't need to manage it yourself. It's not going to be any worse if you listen for 1 hour and put it back in, or listen for 1 hour and then set it down somewhere and listen to it for another hour until you've drained it.
Right.
Don't do that. If you can put them back in the case, you should just do it.
And the truth is, you're going to lose these long before the battery dies.
I think the beauty of what Apple does with their products is, by the time those are not usable anymore, you will have moved on to a different phone and a different set of earbuds, and you will have gone on with your life with new stuff.
Yeah, I think so.
That's what they do.
Yeah, in general.
But they'll last for years.
Yeah, so. And there's two batteries, remember, or actually three. There's a battery in each AirPod, and then there's a separate battery in the case. But it would be kind of complicated for you to say, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to charge these, but I'm not going to charge these. I just, every night, I plug this in with the AirPods in. I'm going to have 100% on both. And that's more than enough to get
more than enough, yeah. And they're pretty great. We were saying before the show started, that's like classic Apple product there.
That's beautiful.
Is maybe the best thing they did last year.
Yeah. And I don't think I'm going to lose them. And the reason I say that is I have hearing aids that are in an equivalently small case, and they themselves are even smaller. And, well, they're thousands of dollars, so I'm highly incented not to lose them, but I have never lost them over more than a year. And I think I'll probably keep these pretty, you know, you just kind of pay attention.
Yeah, I think actually that's the great reason. Even if they had made them somehow so you didn't need the case, I think the case really helps.
I like the case.
Mentally,
exactly.
I will put them back in the case. I know they're in the case. They live in the case. Instead of having them floating around your house.
Yeah, the hearing aids don't need a case. There's no function to the case. It's not a charger. But you definitely, they give you one, and they definitely encourage you to keep them in the case. And that's right. It's hard to lose.
Habit forming. It's good.
It's harder to lose.
And then you won't lose them.
Jason, always a pleasure. I look forward to seeing you Monday. We're going to talk about accessories for your iOS devices.
Yeah, that's always always a fun show.
Yeah.
Happy to do it.
Should be great.
And always great to be on the screensavers, too.
You are at sixcolors.com. That's the flagship. That's where he does all of his writing.
All
some
my writing.
Great stuff, by the
Thank
way.
Thank you very much.
Read it religiously.
Very kind.
And then if you're a podcast fan, Jason has many podcasts, including the Pod for Ham, which continues on.
It's done. We did it.
Oh, you did it. You got all of them?
One track, one episode for every track in Hamilton.
So that's 46? Six?
Something like that, episodes. So people can listen to that from the beginning if they want.
Yep, you did
and
it all.
Much more at theincomparable.com. See, 46.
Well, wait a minute now, because there's also the mixtape. Are you going to start over?
I feel my job is done.
Yeah, you've done
if one of my co-hosts wants to go ahead and to cover the Hamilton mixtape, they're welcome to the feed. They can have it.
And The Incomparable, which is radio theater brought back to life with some of the names.
Radio theater.
A lot of people who
you're in
you
one, and
know.
You'll be in more. And we got lots of other podcasts: TV Talk Machine with Tim Goodman, Random Trek, Robot or Not. with John Siracusa, where we determine whether things are robots or not?
I think John Siracusa is a robot, so he'd be good.
Well, that, I think, is going to be our final episode, would be the revelation of whether John is a robot or not.
It's a cliffhanger.
Then we'll figure it out. We'll get that. We have to set the stage first, and then we'll figure it out.
Thank you so much, Jason Snell. Thank you all for being here. Don't forget, we've got a survey going on. We do this every year. It's a way for us to know a little bit more about you. And because of last year's survey, which ran to 347 questions, no, I'm just kidding, but we did shorten it a little bit.
It was the SAT, basically. Yeah.
We would love it if you'd go to twit.tv/survey and take it. We don't keep any personal information about you. It's really anonymized. It's for us. It's for our sponsors, so they know a little bit better about who's watching the show. It really helps us. And some people are saying, well, like this one, what platform do you use? And say, well, I use all of them. That's fine. Just pick the one you use the most. It doesn't have to be perfect. We have a lot of viewers who are perfectionists. But yes. I use all of them.
And we love them. That's why we love them.
That's why we love you. So, you know, just do the best you can. Don't worry. If a question bugs you, skip it. But it is nice if you could fill that out. Twit.tv/survey tells us a lot about what you like, what you want to hear more of, and what you want to hear less of. Unless it's me, in which case you're
too
out
bad.
It ain't going to happen. We have a store, and did you see this beautiful T-shirt? That's from our store, isn't it? I love that. Teespring.com/stores/twit. Did you wear that? Did you buy that specifically because you were coming here?
Yeah.
Very cute. I like it. And you see we have ladies' styles as well as
men's. Yeah, that's also good. That's a key. A lot of people forget.
Teespring.com/stores/twit. And we've hired a professional model to pretend she's engaged to you so that you... Yeah. Just... what else do I have to plug? Oh, we're here every Saturday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. That's 2300 UTC if you want to watch live. If you want to be in the studio, like our guests from Orlando, just email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put a chair out for you. And if you can't watch live or you can't be here live, we have on-demand audio and video of this show and all of our shows everywhere. I mean, you go to twit.tv/NSS. That's our website. You could go. We have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/twit, where we stream the video live, so you can watch live there. But we also have links to all of the show's channels, so you can subscribe to each individual. And, of course, if you have a podcast app, you just search for New Screensavers. We'll be there, including Spotify, Google Play Music, Stitcher, Slacker, pretty much everything. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time on the New Screensavers. Bye-bye!
Bye, everybody.